So here we are, it's Saturday, June the 4th, 2016, and we are gathered at Lake Junaluska Conference and Retreat Center, and we've been having our gathering of initiates this week, and we usually conclude on the night before the last day with a memory session where we talk about Master. And everyone who wishes to contribute a memory of Master when he was alive, and we would love to hear from you, even if we've heard it before. Who's going to start?
Larry Puma. When Master was in San Jose, there was a session of questions and answers, and I recall some lady had said that in her meditations, she had seen an entity had come up to her. And Master said, "Well, did you say the charged words?" And she said, "Yes, I did." And he said, "Did the personality stay with the charged word?" She said, "Yes, he did." And he said, he chuckled and he said, "Well, he's from the department." "He's from the department," he said. I thought that was good. Then also in San Jose, one of the talks was in a big church. There was, I don't know, it had to be at least 500 people or more. And there was this lady in the crowd, and again, she asked a question to Master, and he looked at her, and he looked at Reno. He looked right at Reno Serene to get his attention, like as if to say to Reno, "Pay attention," right? He looked at Reno, and then he looked back at the lady, and he said, "Are you an initiate of mine?" And she said, "No." And he looked at Reno. He looked back at her and he said, "Who is your master?" And she said, "Sharon Singh." And he looked at Reno. Now here's a crowd of over 500 people. And this lady, and you know, I'm thinking to myself, "Oh my goodness, you know, he knows every one of us. You know, he pays attention to every one of us." So he looks at Reno, he looks back at her, and he says, "Well, do you want to walk or do you want to fly?" And that was that. And then there was another story. We were, during that time, we made friends with this lady who was from Monterey. And she had come, and she had mentioned to Karen and I, she said, "Well," she said, "the master's not going to want to see me." And I said, "Well, how come?" She says, "Well," she says, "during the course of, you know, my time," she says, "my husband is not on the path, so I have to attend to his needs." She said, "And my children, they're not on the path, so I have to cook meat for them." And so you could kind of read between the lines that, you know, she was having some discord with herself, the fact that she wasn't completely, you know, 100% with all the commandments of the master, with the diet and whatnot. So you could kind of tell. And so she said, "I don't think he's going to want to see me." So we said, "Well, okay." So we just kind of left it. And it wasn't but a day or two later in this, after the talk, if you remember when Master would get up to leave, the lines would form. So kind of anticipating his route to get his darshan. So the line formed from the dais and it went down. I think it was it San Jose or Anaheim? It went down and it made a turn, and it went down about 50, 60 feet, and then it turned again, and she was at the end. But I didn't know it at the time. But Master got down, and he's giving darshan, and as he made the turn, he stopped, He looked, and he just went straight for her. She was at the end. He went straight for her. And when he came up to her and he put her hands in his, and he said, there, it's okay. It's okay. And I wouldn't know this unless I had not heard her story before. I wouldn't have the impact of when he went down and he took her hands in his. And he said, it's okay, it's all right. And then he went. That was amazing. Okay, those are mine. Those are my stories. Well, here we go. Who's next?
Okay, there was this teenage kid who came to see Master Talk, and he was really devoted. He wanted initiation. He filled out the papers. He got initiation. And then he's sitting with us, and it was like Master was going to go to L.A. after that. And we have our own story about how that happened for us. But he says, oh, I don't know if I should go to L.A. So we said, well, we're going to try. And God willing, we'll go. So this guy, he was just enamored with Master, and he was obviously seeing good things. But we get to L.A., long story short, and we're sitting down, and here comes this guy. He says, I was trying to figure out if I should go, and he says, well, where is the Master? He's not going to be here. I belong in L.A. So he went. It was really amazing, and he was like giving up work and everything to go. It was really great.
But everybody's heard this 3 or 4 times. What? Oh, you haven't, right? Okay. Can you all stand to hear this one more time?
Yes.
And this is for David and Mary. Okay. It was late. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Absolutely.
It was late 1970, December, and I was living back in Miami, which is where I grew up. And my friend Craig and I were very involved in metaphysical clubs, and I had been a trance medium, and we were doing all kinds of strange things, looking for, we didn't know what, but one evening, Craig and I heard that there would be a speaker at the Fort Lauderdale Women's Club called Paul Twitchell, and he was speaking on Ekankar. So we went up to hear him, and it was quite late. It was, you know, dark at night. It was past 8 o'clock, and it was late December, so it was dark. And we listened to Paul Twitchell speak on Ekankar. And all of a sudden, he was standing on stage and he said, follow me, follow me. This annoyed me greatly. So I stood up and said, why should we follow you? Who are you? And he got very angry and he said, we don't take questions like that. So Craig and I looked at each other, and we got up and headed out. We get to the back of the hall of the Fort Lauderdale Women's Club, and Craig said, okay, I'll get the car. You wait here. I'll pull it around and honk the horn. Well, while he was gone, I looked on the back wall of the club, and there was a picture of the most gorgeous face I had ever seen, an Indian man with a long white beard and a white turban and blue eyes. And I said, wow, this guy looks like what everybody thinks God would look like. So I was standing there enraptured, and I heard Craig honk the horn. So I walked out. Mind you, it's pitch dark. I walked out, And a man jumps out of the bushes and grabs me. And just as I was getting ready to yell, he thrust something into my hand and he said, "Here is your true master," and he runs off. So needless to say, I was in shock. And I got into the car and said, "Craig, let's forget coffee. Just take me home, please." So he dropped me off, and I went into my apartment, and I was in nonplussed. And I sat down and looked at what had been thrust into my hand, and it was the exact same picture that I had been staring at on the back wall of the Fort Lauderdale Women's Club. But there was now a name written on it and an address, Kirpal Singh, somewhere in India. So that very moment, I got out pen and paper and sat down and wrote, "Dear Mr. Singh, tonight I was at the Fort Lauderdale Women's Club, and Paul Twitchell was talking, and I didn't like him, and we got up to go. And I went outside, and some man jumps out of the bushes and grabs me and thrusts something into my hand. And now I'm in my apartment, and I'm looking at it, and it's your picture. So who are you?" And I wrote, mailed this the next morning. And then I called my friend Don Weiser, who was co-owner of the Samuel Weiser Metaphysical Bookstore in New York, which at that time was the largest in the country. And I said, "Don, you ever hear of a guy named Kirpal Singh?" "Oh," he said, "yes, he's the real McCoy." Those were the words he used. "The real McCoy." He said, "He's a real saint, a real guru. Boy," he said, "if you meet him, you're lucky." I said, "Well, gee, thanks for the information." And I sat back and waited. And 3 weeks later, a letter came from Kirpal Singh. And it said, "Dear so-and-so, you were correct in writing to me. Now you must call Jerry AstroTurk at such and such a phone number. And you have to go to a meeting called Satsang. And then we'll go from there." So I called Jerry AstroTurk, and I went down, and she looks at me, and she said, "Sit down."
"I remember when you were there."
"Yeah," and she said, "You listen, and then you'll tell me what you think." I listened for the hour, and this was wonderful, and the whole time I smelled roses. There were roses, roses. It was beautiful, and I looked around. Couldn't see any roses. So after this meeting, she came over to me and said, "What do you think?" I said, "Well, it's beautiful. It's just what I'm looking for." But I said, "Where are all the roses?" She said, "What roses? There are no roses." I said, "Oh, yes, there are, because I've been smelling them for an hour. Beautiful roses." She said, "Oh," you know how Jerry spoke, "Oh." She said, "That's Master. Master's smell is that attar of roses." She said, "Master's here with you. Do you smoke?" "No." "Do you drink?" "No." "Well, as of now," she said, "you're a vegetarian." I said, "Okay." So she said, "It will take at least 3 months before you could ever be initiated." Now, mind you, we are now in mid-January. So fill out these papers, which I did. And I was initiated 2 months later in March. And it took years before I found out that the guy who jumped out of the bushes and grabbed me was Steve Millick. And at one of these retreats here, before Steve died, he was asked, "Why did you do this? What got into you?" And he said he was sitting peacefully at home reading a book, and Master's voice said to him, "Go to the Fort Lauderdale Women's Club. There's somebody there to get." So he got up, went down to the women's club, stood in the doorway and watched everything. And when I stood up and challenged Paul Twitchell, Master said, "That's it." So that's why he did what he did. And that's how I met my master.
Uh, I mentioned a few stories last year. I don't know if you want to hear the repeats. Well, they're not as profound as you, but they're little tidbits of what it's like to be in the company of a master saint. We were in India in 1969 with my wife Judith and my daughter Mira, who was a year and a half old. And the events were continuously every day. Things happened. Incredible things. I don't know which one to tell you first. There's too many. My daughter was definitely a wonderful, sweet soul to come along because he paid a lot of attention to her. She was only a year and a half old. She just began to walk. And she was there most of the time with diaper and a t-shirt, you know. And she would, every evening we had a darshan with Master in his front room. So asking questions, asking, you know, how's it going? There's stories about that. But he would get her attention, and she could not stay away from him. My wife, Judith, felt embarrassed that she was always crawling towards him, and she would pull her back. She let it go. No, she gets you, but let it go. Finally, when she went too far, she went straight to him and fell right at his feet, and he didn't pay any attention. Yes? And he put his feet with his shoes on her. And he went like this. Yes? What is it? And my daughter's going, and it's just an incredible sight with his shoes on. And you could see the little girl, and we were just didn't want to pay attention to her or to him. So after a while, he let her go, and she crawled back. And one time, she crawled up to him, and he had this big, big ball of prasad, the puff rice thing. So he gave a big handful, and just for fun, I don't know why, he dumps it over her head. She's like, and you can tell he's enjoying her being totally intoxicated. I mean, there's nothing in the world. She's only here now. There's no mind yet. So imagine. So she looks around, sits on the floor with all this rice. She picks up one, gets up on her feet, and hands it to him. He takes it from her hand and puts it in her mouth. Little things like this. That's what I remember a lot. One time, as he was ready to leave, she got up, and he was ready to leave, and she picked up his thumb and led him into his room. And Lester went like that. Sometimes we have to be like a child. So there are some of the things that happened. And one time he would put us in meditation every morning himself. Give us the instructions minutely, intently, into the middle. The thing that he said over and over again. Repeating the charge name slowly, but with your full attention. And then he would leave us. And often he would come back, take us out, and ask us, what is it that we saw? Which was unusual, because you heard everybody's inner. So I'm not going to share any of that, but that was very amazing. Anyway, one time he put us in meditation in a separate room, and he says, don't leave until you are asked to leave. So we sat there, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Finally the master comes to take us out of meditation. He opens the door. Everybody was in meditation. I was behind the door. And I opened my eyes, and I see his feet. I said, oh, my God. Close my eyes again. Close the door and left. Sometime later, somebody else came and said, okay, leave off, please. So that evening, he says, I came back to see you after 3 hours, but you were all sitting so sweetly in meditation, I didn't want to disturb you. All of you had your eyes closed, except, was it you? One half a second. Things like that.
Isn't that when he said, if you knew how much
you knew how much love she's experiencing, if you could tell if you how intoxicated she is, you wouldn't be able to last in this body. You would not make it. It would be too much for you to experience. It was just beyond anything. And she was. And one time, DBR Devi got her a little pink dress, and she put it on. She came out with that cute little pink dress, and she was twirling around, doing a little dance. We were watching her. So Master Kripa gives her a big block of sweet stuff that even in India looks like a soap bar, but it's all halva. No. Oh, salad sugar. So she gets this, looks like a brick in her hand. And she's walking around. And we're all watching her. It says, you could not stand it if you had. You'd be dancing all around. Things like that. You'd see that many times. If you could be as pure as she is, this is where I want you to be. Things like that. Oh, one more thing. He scolded me. Badly. Really bad. Well, the first or second darshan in the evening. Yes, what is your name? You're the glad to see you. And you? Good. Where are you from? And then even to Russell Perkins, whom he knew because he'd been there many times, involved in the conference, Beauty of Man and all that, other things, World Conference, he says, what is your name? Russell Perkins. And where are you from? Somebody else from New Hampshire. Okay. Was it somebody else from New Hampshire? Yes, it was already an ashram then. Called an ashram then. Okay. How long are you here for? It's like they just had a meeting the day before, but, you know, he was very involved with Master Kripal. And then he comes to me. He says, do you have a question? I says, yes, Master. He says, why are you calling me Master? Because you are. I tell you, I am not the Master. It is the power. It is the Guru power working with them. It is God power. I am not the Master. You should never think of me. And he went on and on and gave a whole talk about that. All I ask is, Master, can I have a question? And it was amazing. And it only occurred to me just recently, as a matter of fact, that he was talking to me and to somebody else, or to many others. Because I just arrived and, yes, truly, I didn't think of him as the embodiment of God himself, the Lord of the universe, right before my very eyes. But he made that clear. And everybody was almost scared to see anything. Is anybody else? Question? And somebody says, Master, I have one. Yes, what is it? Oh, that's okay with her, but that would be. That sort of thing.
Well, I know many of you have heard the story of being in the presence of the Holy Father, and I'm going to repeat a few, and I hope you don't mind, the rest of you that know it. But I had the incredible joy, honor. There are no superlatives to be in his physical presence. Starting out, the first night that Master came to give a talk at Washington, D.C., Master came in the room and he greeted this one and that one, and it was like he came on the dais. And it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen in the world. Everything about him was intoxication. Everything about him was beauty and glory. I had a desire, a little silly girl desire, to have some recognition that the Master knew that I was there. He gave this one recognition and that one recognition. You know, but anyway, one day when we were having a talk, the Master was. It had been raining. And the pathway that Master was coming down, and there was just hundreds and hundreds of people. And Master got out of his car, and he was coming, and everybody was looking at the Master. And I was looking at the puddle that the Master was going to have to walk through. And I was looking here and there and everywhere. Okay, who's going to take care of this? The master's feet. The master's feet. So, anyway, the blanket went down, the shawl that my mother had knitted for me, in the puddle. And the master came down. And, of course, I went back into the crowd, you know, shy. I was very, very shy. And the master came down and he looked at it. And he had the sweetest look and the most humble look. And it's like, how could master be humbled by that? You know, it's like your mind kind of goes somewhere else. And he's so humble and he takes such a sweet, I mean, the motion of the step, it's kind of like, the whole thing was in slow motion, and it still is in my mind. But he stepped on it, and he looked at me. Just the power of God hit me like boom. And through mind transference, he said, it is the Master who blesses us when we are allowed to serve him. And he looks up and goes, one thing that I've become aware of, Master is the epitome of expedience. He was the master of time. He was so expedient. He gave you what you needed, and then he went on to the next one. Anyway, getting back to the day of the talk with the master's blanket. Of course, I was just overwhelmed and just couldn't believe it. And long story short, the master gave us what we wanted in a way that we couldn't even have possibly have thought of. He took care of it. He took care of all our little wants and needs. And then he started scrubbing you, and then he started cleaning you. By his physical presence, you were cleansed. And by the time we got to St. Bonnie, I was hooked. I was in love. And it was cold. It was very, very cold. Moving on, Master, when he was giving his talks, became his words. So when you hear or when you read that the Master, the words are the Master, it's true. It's not just something nice to say. One evening, the Master was giving a talk about love. And let me back up and just say that. The Master did not obey the physical laws of the universe with his physical form. It changed. It was different in many different shapes and forms. This particular talk about love, the Master became this enormous golden light that just came through the whole audience and permeated us. He was just permeating us with love, and he was talking about love. So when you hear that the Master's words are the Master's, it is true. And then there's continuing scrubbing, and then you have these little scenarios with different folks and whatnot, and whatever that is taking care of and winding up our karma. But anyway, by the time we got to St. Augustine, I was crying, constantly crying, because the separation from the physical presence of the Master is unbearable. And I just could not comprehend anything beyond being in his physical presence. And I happen to love bodies of water, and I love going to the ocean and lakes and such. And I wanted to go, I had a little desire to go out and look at the water because we were in St. Petersburg. And I went out to the shore and I looked out at the water. And there was no joy. There was nothing of pleasure. So I turned around and there was the master in his room. And it was a couple of floors up, so I was looking up, and it was like, oh, Holy Father. And he was talking to someone, and they were, you know, he was giving his advice, and then he took his turban off, and that was so beautiful, just to have some little precious moment that was the master, and just the motion of his taking off the turban, and Holy Father, without his turban. And I looked up, and he turned around and looked out his window. I don't know if he was looking at me, but there was the master, and I was looking up at him, and I said, oh, dear master, I am so, so far from you. And there are sharks in the water. Please, please, I beg you, Holy Father, keep me at your feet. That is the best that I can hope for. So, you know, we went along and we moved on to Miami. And being part of the Miami Sangat, we were asked to do Seva during his visit there. And Master, of course, Master uses others to help teach us his lessons. And one day, the Master was giving a talk in a park, and there was this big pile of sandwiches. And after the talk, Master came over, and he picked up one of the sandwiches, and he fondled it and put it back down and went on. And one of the kitchen help happened to be sitting right there, and he picked up the sandwich. And I said, you lucky fellow, you lucky fellow. Anyway, after everybody came up and got their sandwich, this sweet fellow took that sandwich, and he broke it apart and gave it to each one of us who happened to be working in the kitchen. And of course, I popped it in my mouth. And the power in his parshad, I was so intoxicated, the withdrawal process started. And I was just withdrawing and just like dazed and intoxicated. And to me, that was the message of graciousness and generosity. I was so impressed with this young man's generosity. But then I thought he was just a pipe. It was the master power that was transmitted. And he just happened to be the vessel. One more thing. The day that Master left, I happened to be in the hallway. And I wanted to kind of melt into the wall because we want to give the Master his ability to pass. Well, the Master came and he brushed against my body with his body and said, yes, God bless you. And then we got on the car to go to the airport, and there was the Master's car right there, and you got to see him the whole way to the airport. And there was no one else but the Master. The Master put us in the place where there is nothing between you and the Master. And at some point, there was only the Master. And it occurred to me during this state that I needed to hold this state, that this was where he wanted us to be.
Rosemary Michael, this is not dramatic as most of the things we've heard before, but the significance came to me as I was reminded yesterday, and it's something that I think will remind a lot of you people of experiences you've had. When I first learned of Master, I was not near any satsang. I was just reading the materials, but I heard certain things from people, and I was convinced, but I wanted some kind of a connection, something, and I heard that you could write Master. And this, I remembered this not too long ago. I met a younger woman who, the circumstances were such that she learned that I was an initiative of Kirpal Singh. She knew of the path, and she said, "Oh, I hear that you initiates of Kirpal Singh, you have a Master that you could write letters to, and he would write back to you." I mean, just in amazement that that was possible. And that took me back, and I remembered that I heard back at that time you could write Master. And so I'm thinking, what can I write him about, you know, that's not just frivolous. And so I came up with, I said, you say to stay in whatever religion you're in, but you also say, no, don't drink alcohol, and the church that I'm attending now serves the communion wine, has alcohol in it. So can I drink communion wine or not? So I figured, I think I probably knew what the answer was, but it was an excuse to write a letter. So I did, and got back the letter, which this is what I'm sure probably many of you did, the little tissue paper folded up very small so that they could all be put into a bigger packet that either people carried or was sent, and folded and, you know, not exactly evenly and all, but then you open up the tissue paper, and the answer was, "I'm sorry, but if to drink alcohol will hinder you on your progress on the path." But the thing was, at the time I received that letter, and as I opened it, I just got an electric shock. It just went through me, and I was just shaking. I could hardly hold the letter. So I realized I got my answer.
I have nothing really profound to say. The first thing is, obviously, a lot of this realization came recently, mostly from being here. And I see stories of people who do 5 and 6 hours of meditation, and unfortunately, I'm not much of a meditator. I quickly realized I made a major miscalculation about Master Kirpal. Our initiation in 1972, you know, was enough to give me experience that he was the real deal, but it was not a great experience. I thought I would, you know, everything would be wonderful. It wasn't. But I saw him at Charlotte, and the plane came in, and even before he got there, I could just feel this incredible power. I was like, what is this going on? I could hear the sound, and it was just unbelievable. And when he got off the plane and I saw him, there was no doubt that this was not just a human being, but some incredible power. It was like nothing I've ever seen before. And it just took me away. Then about, I think it was at St. Petersburg, I was feeling sorry for myself because I was not having great meditation experiences and everybody else seemed to be doing that. So I made a stupid prayer like, you know, if you're real God, why don't you just kind of display yourself? This was a big mistake. All of a sudden, the answer was, I'll give you just a slight taste of what I am and what God is. It was like an atomic bomb went off in my head, and I got this huge electric shock that just went through my whole body. And I couldn't speak for about 2 days. It was just, you know, the lesson was, don't fool around with God, you know, don't do that. This was a mistake. This was not a man. This was some absolute incredible power. The other thing I learned was something I didn't expect at all. You know, I learned later on that there is nothing but Master. There's nothing else. He controls everything and does everything. There is nothing but Master. The world is not what we think it is. It is just Master. There is nothing else. That is God. And all these experiences are true. And that in itself is such an incredible thing that we have been able to partake of that, that words, you know, can't even convey that. You know, it's just beyond that. Thank you.
Well, I'd just like to bring up an interesting happening. This is Rudy Cascone. While I was over in India at the Union of Man conference, I was watching Master. You know, he's up on the DS, and you're there like a lot of hours, you know. So, and you get to see him. You close your eyes. You can see Master inside you, you know, because that image of him is there, you know. So. But anyway, Steve Melick had told me about this one man named Bridge Mohan, who was a disciple of Master's, you know, and it was an interesting story about him that he had all these terrific, what do you call, inner experiences, and he was spouting them forth to everyone. He would tell them about all the suns and things that he would see, the stars and all the things. So finally, Master said, you know, he just turned it off. So he said, and I remember Steve mentioning him. He said, Master grounded me. You know, but anyway, so I get outside of, you know, during a break, and I wanted to meet him. So there he was, Bridge Mohan. And I said, oh, hi, I've often heard about you, and Steve Melick had mentioned you and Jim Cataldo. So I said, oh, come on, have a cup of tea. But while I was looking at Master before, you know, I was thinking, oh, wouldn't it be so great if I could stay here in India? And how would I do that? And I'm thinking, well, if I marry one of these Indian gals, I could stay here. You know, I could stay here, you know, because you have someone here and you're married to them and they give you free, you know, free access to the country. So, I just thought that would be a good idea. But anyway, I'm talking to Bridge Mohan. He said, come on, have a cup of tea. So I go into the tea area, you know, we're sitting down. And in the corner, three gals come in the doorway, three Indian women, nice young gals, you know. So Bridge Mohan looks at me, he says, do you like any of these? So I looked at him, I said, no, in fact, one of them looked exactly like my mother, you know. So I didn't really, you know, really want that, but I said, thank you, Master, but no thanks. I said, okay. That was a good idea. But anyway, this is a story for Marcia Clark and Mark, you know, because they didn't know this about me, and you haven't heard this story. So I was a young man over in Massapequa, New York, you know, and so I've been searching for Master, for something, you know, for something. I didn't know exactly what it was. I didn't know I needed a Master at all. But anyway, one day I reached a point where I was in a cul-de-sac, and there was no way out, and I didn't know what to do, so I kneeled down in the middle of my bedroom, and I said, "Oh God, Master," I said, "Oh God, help me, please." I said, "I need to find some place where there is truth, and there are true people around, I don't know, and get me out of this situation. I mean, I'm in a dead end, you know." But it was a sincere prayer, I mean, really from my heart. And so I left it that way. So everything changed from that day on, you know. So things started to move in that direction, you know. So I really believed the prayer. I really believed that something was going to happen within us. I really believed it. So we had flown over to Florida, and my cousin was a psychic sort of, you know. She was into yoga and different experiences. So she was on the beach one day, and I walked up to her, and I shook her hand, and I touched her hand. This current comes through her hand right into me. It was a strong current, and I knew this current was something real that you could rely on. This was the only real thing I felt in my life. I said, "This is real. This is something you could base your life on, this current." So I said, "Oh," from then on, I went back to New York. I told them, "I'm leaving New York. I'm moving to Miami, Florida, you know, so I can get it there, you know, because I know that that's where I was supposed to get it." And sure enough, I drive down to Miami. I get an apartment and everything. And right near my cousin, whom I know that she's like my link to this current here. And she said, "You know, there's this master coming, you know, he'll be here at the Gold Ocean Mile, you know, he'll be coming." And I got two initiates of his that live in my apartment upstairs, you know. So they had shown me some of Master's books. So all along, though, I get up into my apartment, and I'd be hearing this trumpet in my head, you know. So I go, pa-pa-da-ba, and I look outside, and I look out the window, you know, there's nothing out there, you know, no cars are out there, you know. So I said, "What is that?" You know, all along. So then I hear it again, you know, and it kept on going. So finally, Master shows up, and he's at the Gold Ocean Mile, and this trumpet's going along all along, you know, the roadway. We're going up to see Master. And as we get about a mile before, dead silence. Dead silence. And finally get to see Master. He's up at the DS. He's a beautiful man. Beautiful man. Came all in white. You know, he's so gingerly. And my cousin mentioned that, "Oh, look at him. He's just like a big babe up there. A big baby, you know, just a big innocent babe up there on the DS, you know." She said, "Look at you, Rudy. You got this pink light around you, you know, all around you, this pink light." So that was fine, you know. But anyway, initiation day came, you know. I mean, they took the initiation papers. The funny thing, Ben Ringel was handing out the initiation papers, and so they gave the initiation papers to my cousin and her husband. And they read the instructions, and they said, "You have to be a vegetarian." But my cousin's husband, he says, "No, I can't do this. You know, I can't do it because I'm a meat eater. I won't be able to take the initiation." So anyway, I said, "Can I have the papers too?" He said, "You too? You want one?" I said, "Yeah, I'll have one. You know, I'll take the papers." Okay. So, Master was having two talks at the Stranahan High School. So I went by myself. I walked in the door, and on the table they had a couple of books. And there was The Mystery of Death and the Wheel of Life and the Mystery of Death, all combined in one book. And then they had Spirituality. So I said, "Well, that is really pulling me, the mystery of death, you know, I would like to know. But since I'm a young guy, you know, and I'm new on the path, this one sounds more like a preliminary one, you know. So I picked the spirituality book. So I took that and I sat down in the audience, you know, waiting for Master to come. I opened the book and flash of light shoots out of the book. And in back of me is this fellow, the Jewish fellow, I forget, I think his name is Snyder. Anyway, he saw it too, you know, so he comes around and he sits right next to me. And he said, look, he says, in this book it states that you can take this path as an experimental on experimental basis. So I said, oh, well, after I seen that flash of light, I was pretty well convinced, you know. So I that something great was happening, you know. So anyway, so that was fine. Master was coming down the aisle, and people were pushing me all the way over. I was at the edge. They were pushing me all the way to the front. And I said, no, I don't want to get near him because I'm having all this turmoil and all this trouble flooding up into me. So I don't want to get too close to him. But Master's coming by, and he comes to me, and he takes a big wide turn around and makes sure he doesn't get close to me, you know. yeah, because I was having this thing, you know, things were in my mind. Don't go to this guy because he's very terrible, you know. Oh, my God. And the negative power is shooting all these crazy thoughts in my head, you know. So I said, oh. Well, and then I thought, now, if the devil is after me, you know, and he doesn't want me to see this guy, it must be the real thing. You know, so I was convinced the other way around because they were pushing me in the right direction. So, you know, so that was mostly how it is. And then I went outside and I said, let me go make sure I know where the initiation place is. So I drove my car, made sure I know where it was. Then I came back. And when I got back to the second talk, that same man was there, Mr. Snyder, a Jewish fellow. He says, here, have these cashews. I know you didn't eat anything. And he took a pillow and he put it right at Master's feet where Master would talk. And he said, here, you sit here. And I sat down there, and I didn't have any problem after that.
Alan Nikomov, this is really good. At first I said, no, I didn't really, you know, I won't say anything. I'll just listen. But this, it brings in this long-ago time, this unbelievable long-ago time, into sharp focus. And I said, yeah, okay, I remember now. I remember. And I had the blessing of being able to go on Master 72 tour throughout the East Coast from, well, North Montreal down to Miami, West Ontario to Chicago, even Cincinnati. And the experiences were immense. It was surrealistic. But this, how I relate, it was not very dramatic. It seems very simple, and the laugh was on me. I thought I gave up a lot to be initiated. This mass initiated a lot of different kinds of people. Some were seeking all their lives. Some were running away from Master. And here I was in New Hampshire, around St. Bonnie, just by chance, wanted to get in on this counterculture lifestyle, to be like a craftsman, you know, and really smoking pot, drinking, laid-back kind of existence, which I was doing, and I was very self-satisfied. So I kept hearing stories about this ashram, St. Bonnie, and this guru, and God, and reincarnation, and it got to me. I said, wow, I mean, I'm an agnostic, I don't know, what do I, but if it's true, I better get on board. Otherwise, I could be in trouble. So I worked hard for my initiation at St. Bonnie. I gave up drinking alcohol. I stopped smoking pot. I became a vegetarian. All for getting an initiation, you know, not out of any great conviction. And Russell was very strict with me. He said, you have to be a vegetarian for 6 months, and you have to read. And he went over the theory with me. Okay, so I got initiated. And the Master is coming. His first was Washington International Airport, right? fortunately, I had family very well situated, so I had people to stay with during the tour. And a group of us drove down from St. Bonnie area. It was like a caravan. We drove to Washington, where I was able to stay with my sister and my wife and baby. And so we were going to see Master. He was coming into Washington, you know, the airport. And I thought people were very orderly. They got us into form two lines, and Master was going to walk down the middle giving darshan. I didn't know what to expect, but I expected something. Because here, you know, I did all this work to be initiated, and I was an initiate, and I did all the rules and regulations for some 6 months, and I figured I'd get something. And then Master walks down the aisle, you know, on both sides looking at people giving darshan, and he looked at me and gave darshan. I don't know. And after he passed, friends and people I knew from St. Bonnie were saying, oh, we saw Master, he was radiating. He was 10 feet tall. And I was saying, well, I don't know. I didn't see anything. I just saw this Indian Sikh guy with a turban and a nice beard walking down giving darshan. Except I said there was something that stood out. I said, he has gold eyes. And everybody laughed. And, you know, to this day, I said, here he was giving me a blessing and darshan, and my mind just couldn't, you know, fully comprehend it and accept it.
Oh, my goodness. It must be the Miami Satsangs night, so I'll tell my story, too. Rudy and I got initiated. Can everybody hear me? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Scott Stewart. I had to think about that for a minute. You know, it's funny listening to everybody. First of all, I want to say this, and I'll just take a short break to say this. And I'm sure I speak with all of us here that we're also thankful for everything you've done, David and Livia and John and everybody on the board, because you make it so easy for the rest of us to just come and sit and meditate. And I know you guys will work really hard to organize everything. So I just want to say thank you on behalf of all of us. I'm sure everybody feels the same way. So I didn't have the privilege to go to India, and I wanted to go so badly. And, you know, Master passed, and I won't talk about that. It's just so hard to talk about that. But I felt like I was blessed to have been part of the Miami Satsang because there's so much energy there that, you know, when Master came, and if it wasn't for my dear friend Bobby, I'd be insane and crazy today because I wouldn't have got initiated. But it probably went back as far as when I was a little boy. I used to have a prayer. And I was raised in a Christian tradition, and it was, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before awake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. I was mom, dad, my sister, and I went through that whole routine. And every time I did that, I had this presence. It was like a bubble that was around me, and I sensed it even as a little boy. And unfortunately, I left that because I was so unsatisfied. I was one of those kids at church that asked all the questions that nobody could answer at a Sunday school, and I was totally unsatisfied. And I mentioned this earlier to a couple other people. I was so disappointed why the Master only came one time in the form of Jesus, and, you know, 2,000 years ago. And I said, well, that's not fair. I want to see him. I want to talk to him. I want to ask him these questions. You know, it didn't make any sense to me. So that was in my core. And then, of course, I left all that and became about as worldly as anybody possibly could. You know, leading the college life and doing all that. I even, embarrassing to almost say this, like I remember being drunk on the, laying down on the ground doing that prayer that I just told you about. And I meet Bobby, and everything changed when he told me about the path, and I was so nervous and afraid that I was going to miss it. And so he invited me to a satsang, and of course Astra was there, and I'd never met anybody like her. And everybody that knows her knows what I'm talking about, and she'd look right at you, you know. And so when Master came, Bobby picked me up. We went to see Master at the airport, and I absolutely thought he wasn't touching the ground. And if there was 1,000 people there, he's the only one you saw. It was just the way it was for me. And then we went to Burt State Park, but I got zapped the same night you did, Rudy, at Stranahan. And the young lady I was dating at the time was there, and Bobby was there, and the girls, and Pat, who were all initiated. And I remember Astra used to say, don't try and command the Master's look. You know, because people wanted to darshan, and so everybody would clasp their hands. And Master came off the dais, and you know how auditoriums are. You got seats in the middle, you got seats in the end, you got an aisle, and you got an aisle, typical high school auditorium. And Master came down like this, and so everybody was rushing over to the edge to try and get Master to look at him. I'm going to start crying here if I'm not careful. And so I was sitting there. I said, don't try and command the Master's look. And he looked right at me and absolutely blew my socks off. And you're right. You can't describe Master's eyes. It's impossible. And it was almost like somebody turned the lights on. And I was just like stunned. And I had a feeling they knew everything about me. I felt totally naked. And I felt guilty because of you feel so unclean in the presence of a God man. And then I was really scared that he wasn't going to accept me in your initiation. I ran to see Bob. I said, Bob, I got to get initiated. He said, no worries. Let's go get Astor. So I go ask her. She's looking at me. She said, no, it's all right. It'll be okay. So then I go, and that was that day. It was the women's club. And we go in there, and I didn't realize, I didn't know Rudy then. We kidded about this since we were both at the same initiation. And Master was looking over, and he kept looking. I thought he was looking at me. I said, oh, my God, he's going to ask me to leave. So, he didn't, thank God. But it's, you know, it's hard to explain, and I feel so blessed to be with all of you. I mean, you know, there isn't anybody outside of this group that's initiated that you can ever share in the world that understands what it's like and what the feeling is. I mean, nobody appreciates that unless you've had that. And I don't say that arrogantly. That's not my point. It's just I feel really blessed to be initiated, and there's hardly a day goes by I don't weep like a little baby, because if you think about it, what a great, you know, blessing it is that he chose you. And when he says the Master chooses you, it's overwhelming, I think. Anyway, thank you.
Well, I can tell you what I think is the reason that I'm here tonight. And that is, when I was a little boy, I lived in the middle of a golf course in Ohio, Willoughby, Ohio, which is east of Cleveland, out in the country. And I was probably 6 and 7 years old. And a number of evenings, I would go out on the third tee, which was right near our house, and look, I would lay on my back, and I would look up at the stars. And in those days, they didn't have city lights like it's built up now. It was incredible, just the millions of stars in the sky. And I would say to myself, and the bats were flying around, and I would say to myself, what am I doing here? What is this all about? And I found out later that Master said, when you ask that question, it has to be answered. So that's why I'm here.
Okay, I got one more. My mother. My mother, sweet soul, very simple soul. And when we came on the path, my mother was a Christian lady, and my father was very, very Christian. He didn't want anything to do with the Master. I was definitely going to hell. So, but my mother, she had more of an open mind, you know. So we had a painting, I believe, or a photo of Master in our living room. And my mom and dad had come over. We were living in Las Vegas at the time, and they had come over to visit us. And my mother says, Larry, she says, you know, she says, every morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, somebody's waking me up. And they're waking me up to pray. She said, I know they're waking me up to pray, that I have to pray. I have to praise God. She says, I hear this choir, this singing, this beautiful music. And I says, Mom, I says, well, do you see anything else? She says, well, she looked at the photo, and she says, I see a balloon, the top of a balloon, and it's kind of going like this, and it's bouncing, and it went like that, and it went right to Master's picture, she says, and she was going to say, it's him. But she realized that my father was sitting there, the born-again Christian. So she shut, she sealed her lips, and she was why it was the revelation to her that it was Master who was getting her up in the morning at 3 o'clock in the morning. So as time goes on, she would come and visit me, and my dad would bring her over, and we'd have satsang together. My dad would leave her in Los Banos for 3-4 days a week with me, and so we'd have satsang, and she would listen, and she would be so happy. And then as she got older, just before she passed, we were in her trailer, and her and my dad, and she had told me, Larry, she says, I don't have long for this world. And she had been to Florida, and she had been to Miami Satsang. She had been there. And she says, I want to go to Florida. She says, and I want to die in the satsang. She says, I want to go there, and I want to die over there so I can be with Master. I could be there. I said, Mom, I said, you don't have to do that. I said, Master, you're with Master. He's going to take you. You don't worry about that. I said, you're his. And oh, she was so happy. And then one night she tells my dad, you know, God love him. He loved her. He loved us. But that was his understanding. And she stood up. She could barely stand up. She was holding on to the chair. She says, Phil, she says, I'm with them. I'm with them. I'm with their group. And he says, Mary, he says, you don't mean that. He says, after all Jesus has done for you, he healed you. He did all these things. You mean to tell me after all he's done for you? And she put her hand on her hip. She was only about 80 pounds, barely. She put her hand on her hip like this. She says, and you tell me, what has Jesus done for me? She says, he hasn't done anything for me. He says, the Master's done everything for me. She says, I'm with them. She had the nerve because we were there in the room. See, she could stand up to him, so. But it wasn't, you know, we left, we came back to Florida, and I had that nice visit with her before she passed. But a few days later, she passed away. But Master was appearing to her. So it goes to show you the near and dear ones that it's absolutely true that he takes care of the near and dear ones to us.
Talking about Master's picture, I was going to tell a story on Jonas here real quick. I'm going to get right to you. In Miami, just 2 seconds. In Miami, they had real estate back then was done in magazines as opposed to being on the Internet today. And one time, one of Jonas's pictures of Master was on the very, I don't know if you know this, Jonas, but it was on the cover of the magazine, and it went to every realtor in Dade County. And it was an incredible, and I thought to myself, wow, isn't that cool? Everybody got to see that. It was on the very cover of that real estate magazine.
Oh. Well, I'm sure everybody knows where to continue about near and dear ones. When we went to follow Master in from Northern California to Southern California, we stayed with my mother, who didn't know from Master at all. She didn't care. In fact, when we gave her our song thing, she says, oh, I just love your singing, even with all those guru shops. But she wanted to spend time with us, and we wanted to spend time with Master. So we said, well, we're going to see Master. We came here to see Master, and I'm sorry, we can't spend much time with you. She says, well, if I have to go with you, I will, because I want to see you guys. So we said, okay, you come too. So she came at all of the talks with Master, and she sat with us and listened to everything. And lo and behold, of course, Master does his own work. she filled out papers. And then she's sitting next to me. She's thinking about it. And she says, oh, my God, Joe, I can't do this. And I said, well, what do you want to do? She says, well, you got to give back the papers, you know, because I can't do this. She says, I don't want to just throw them away. They got to be given back. So you do it. And I said, no, I tricked her. I said, you have to give the papers back to Master by yourself. And she said, well, I'm not going there by myself. You're coming with me. So I said, okay, I jumped at the opportunity to be that close, you know. So I walked up. We got through the line, and here we are. Master's face was this far away from her. And she says, she holds the papers in her two hands like this, and she hands them to Master, and she says, I'm so sorry, sir. I don't believe that I can keep the diet and the diary and give up my smoking and my drinking and my meat. I don't want to be a hypocrite. So I'm sorry, but I can't do this. Will you please take these back? Well, Master takes his hands, and he put one underneath her two hands and one on top of the papers, and he's patting her, and he said, he looked at me, looked at her, and said, that's all right, honey. He says, you're under my care anyway. And her whole life changed after that. She became out of nowhere. She was a loan officer at Bank of America for 25 years. And she loved Master, but she never got the thing. But at the end, she was seeing Master. He came for her.
You have to say something. John
McIntosh. We saw a Master in Montreal in 1972. He stayed at the Windsor Hotel. First time I stayed in a hotel. We had the smallest room in the place. And my wife decided to volunteer our room as a children's room. People who weren't staying in the hotel but were coming there to see Master, they had a place to have their kids. So Master then said that he would visit the children's room. So he said what time, and people started to show up, and all the people with children showed up, and then people that knew children, and people that knew how to spell the word, and then everyone was there. This little room, and of course, every once in a while they'd take a piece of furniture out, but really, you can almost touch both walls, you know, standing in the middle. At one point, my wife kind of nudges me, and she says, look behind you, what's going on? And it's like row after row of people. It's like the fishes and the loaves or something, you know, the whole world is in this room. And then Master comes in and, you know, goes through whatever. And after he left, the people started leaving and the room came back to its normal size. And I think it was Nelia who was talking about how things change around the Master.
Well, okay, I have lots and lots and lots of stories. I don't know, I'm trying to pick. I was initiated in 1966. My roommate and I ended up searching for the higher truth for 5 long years in Greenwich Village. We were full-fledged hippies, doing everything that you could possibly think of. We did it. But we were seeking. He was actually seeking more than me. I became a seeker by adopting his method. It was kind of interesting. So we went from door to door, church to church. Every movement you can think of, every Swami Izzy, every Nanadanda, Bhagadanda, Kudarabanda, all of them. We asked. And the question that we asked mostly is, give me an experience of what you're talking about. They said, you can't have it. You have to do this for so many years. And if you do it properly, you know, you'll get there. So fortunately, I spent so much time and and I don't get anything. But you don't understand, this is the only path. But they all say that. So we didn't go through anything. We kept seeking and seeking, trying to ask all kinds of questions. And there was a young lady that came in, needed a place to stay. She was not doing too well. So we let her stay in our place, and she was very grateful. Took care of her, fed her, gave her some money. And she went back to Vermont, and she went to Goddard College next to Kupal Ashram, and she got a book of The Wheel of Life. And she says, I know two guys in New York that need to know about this. So she sent us the book, and my roommate at the time's name was Tasha. That was his hippie name. We got the book. I opened the book, and I see a picture of the master, and I knew. I just knew. This is it. After 5 years, we found him. He says, no, you got to test it out. You do, but I don't. So he read the whole book. He says, you know, it's good. It's very, very good. Let's go to the satsang. So we went to the satsang, Ben Ringo was a co-preacher. And sure enough, we both turned on to the path. This is it. We're going to apply for initiation. So he's the first one to write a letter. Dear Master, I need initiation. You know, picture of them, a picture of yourself, you know, the procedure that we followed back in those days. And signed it, Tasha. Master replies, I received your unsigned letter. What was his name? I forgot. Ed Wallace. Thank you. Blessed Ed Wallace. He's the one who brought me interested in the path. So once he immediately changed his name back to Ed Wallace. He didn't like his regular names too corny. He liked Tasha. He had red hair and red beard. All the women loved him. We had a great time in Greenwich Village. But then it became important to follow the path. And our lives changed completely. There's one thing after another, completely. Anyway, one interesting story you mentioned about your mother. I had a private meeting with Master Kupal, I think it was in India. I think it was in India. 1969, I forget who it was. And I was wondering about my mother, who was a pretty off mentally, physically, emotionally. She was a mess. But nonetheless, when I was a child, I was painting. I painted a lot since I was a kid. She said to me, why don't you paint what you see inside? What is she talking about? Close your eyes and you'll see all these fireworks and these colors and everything. Why don't you paint that? What? Okay, look, close your eyes, stay with your eyes closed, and you'll see a big red sun, you'll see a big eye, and you'll see the moon, and da 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 da. I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm relating this to Master Kupal. And he says, look here, she has a background. And she doesn't even speak English. She's all nuts. She creates problems wherever she goes. She has a background. She should get initiated. And she did. She was an advanced soul. Her? You know, she belongs in an asylum. She's so crazy. But she was initiated. And she got it. And I'm very, very blessed. I'm very blessed because she guided me without guiding me. She did not allow me to have friends. She did not allow me to do any sports. She controlled my life. And she had taught me to be focused in one thing, painting. So I've been painting since I was a little kid. And I learned to focus on that. I put my whole, all the things that a child wants to do, I wasn't allowed to do. I was very good at sports. She said letters, you can't do it, he's too sick. Not sick. Your mother says you can't do that. I had very, extremely dyslexic, so I couldn't read well. I was not allowed to have friends because all the friends I wanted were French and they're Christians, so that's no good. I didn't want to be friends with Jews, I didn't like them. I didn't want to be friends with Arabs. Actually, I did, because I liked their music, but I wasn't allowed to. I was only allowed to stay in the apartment and paint. And she gave me opinions, she gave me care, copy this and copy that. So I copied and I copied and I copied. That's all I did. And I got my training that way. And that focus, which is the expression of the soul, is what she taught me without realizing that she was teaching me to be totally involved. Mind, soul, spirit, just do that. I had to do that. Otherwise I go crazy. I'm a young kid growing up. Couldn't do anything else. It was very interesting as she taught me. She was self-employed. I'm self-employed. She had a name on the door. She was an embroiderer in Casablanca. My name's on the door. She had assistants. I had assistants. She had somebody thread her needles. I had people clean my brushes. She taught me everything that I know. Different skill, but she taught me everything. She was nuts, but she was great. And she was a master's child. It was interesting. So that was an interesting blessing. Because I was cursed. I had a miserable childhood. I was a terrible childhood. But I had a perfect one. Not realizing that this was my mission. And the master knew, God knew, the master knew that I was going to get initiated. And there was a purpose for me to do this. And I'm doing it because I don't know what else to do. That's all I did. I'm not trained. I never went to art school. I just was focused. And he taught me everything. And then it developed. And I still am. And I'm very grateful. Extremely grateful. And there's no word to express my gratitude for what's happening in my life right now.
Arshad? Yeah. I just wanted to say one more thing about the master and the tour. I had the opportunity to be at his feet at one time, and I looked up, and there was this old man with his teeth gone, and I was thinking, where's the master? Because this is the only time that master, in my opinion, wasn't there. It was just a physical body. And it taught me that master is not the physical body. Anyway, 2 years ago, our dear sister Charlene Sherwin told us a story about receiving Parshad from the master. And the master wrote her a letter, and he said, any morsels that you add to this Parshad will also be Parshad. And fortunately, 2 years ago, in my bag, there were some little pieces of candy. And I thought, aha. So I wrote her, Charlene, to verify that this was the original Parshad that Master had given to her. So that Parshad has been some of the Parshad has been pulverized. And it was added to some food, which makes it Parshad. So we would like to pass this around. And this is from the master. And I'm going to quickly walk around so it will expedite the thing. So thank you so much.